Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, spiritual relationship healer, and somatic body psychotherapist, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the book, Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, and the romantic novel, Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of Healing Through Love seminars, Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me Relationship System, and the 30-Day Love Challenge. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who are proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond. Today, I'm speaking with Dr. Brant Courtright, a highly respected clinical psychologist and professor of psychology at California Institute of Integral Studies. His consulting practice specializes in cutting-edge brain health and the use of neuroscience to upgrade your brain and your life, which is the subtitle of his third book, The Neurogenesis Diet and Lifestyle. He explains the symptoms and stages of cognitive decline, dementia, and Alzheimer's, and also the solution. I didn't realize there is a solution. In his latest book, he shares research lifestyle factors that can keep our brains to remain healthy, our memory and learning to remain functional in our brain cells as they continue to regenerate. So I'm really excited to be speaking with Dr. Courtright. So welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So right away, I would like to hear about your background and education and training and what led to your knowing about all of this, studying all of this.
Okay. Well, I'm a clinical psychologist by training, and my interest over the past few decades has really been in consciousness, human consciousness, and how to expand and open and grow and develop our consciousness. And that has led me over the years to the brain, because every level of our consciousness we experience through the brain, whether it's a physical sensation or whether it's an emotion, an impulse, a desire, a thought, or a spiritual state, everything we experience through our brain. And if we have a high-quality brain, we will have a high-quality life. And that led me into this new field of neurogenesis. So neurogenesis is the brain producing new brain cells. It's the generation of new neurons. And it used to be believed, up until 16, 17 years ago, that the brain in human beings stopped growing new brain cells when we were in our early 20s. And after that, it was just a slow die-off. And then they discovered that's not true. Actually, the brain makes new brain cells throughout our entire lifetime. Now, they didn't know what the meaning of this was for a long time, but in the last few years, this stuff is quite new. The last few years, it's become clear that your rate of neurogenesis is about the most important biomarker for health that most people have never heard of. So it turns out that a low rate of neurogenesis, that is a low rate at which your brain is making new brain cells, is associated with memory problems, with cognitive decline, cognitive deficits, as well as with anxiety, stress, and depression, and even lowered immunity. And high rates of neurogenesis, that is, a high rate at which your brain is making new brain cells, are associated with the opposite, with rapid learning, with cognitive enhancement, with rapid problem solving, and with robust emotional resilience and protection against stress, against anxiety and depression, as well as heightened immunity. And it turns out just about all of us can increase our rate of neurogenesis by at least 5 times, probably more than that, with really quite dramatic changes in the quality of our life and our brain's functioning. So that's what this book is. It's pulling together all the research around all of this into one place. Sorry, go ahead.
It's so exciting for me to hear you talking about this. I was a professor of health and physical education, and it was like the low man on the totem pole at this fashion institute. And even the fashion and the creative arts are usually low man on the totem pole in most other places. And these seem to be the most important things, using your creativity and exercising. Those are so important for our health and our brain. So I'd love to hear more about that from you, and also what the factors are that we can work with to improve our brain health.
Yes. So this is a holistic approach, meaning body, heart, mind, spirit, that if we stimulate every level of our brain, every level of our consciousness, that they all work together synergistically, much more powerfully than if we just do one thing or two things. Doing one thing or two things better than doing nothing, but if we can do all of these, we get a very powerful effect on the brain. Because some things increase our rate of neurogenesis and other things increase the survival of those new neurons. For example, running or any kind of aerobic exercise. You know, exercise is fantastic. Exercise is probably the single most helpful thing anybody can do to increase their health. It's better than any medicine, better than any drug. Mm-hmm. And there's different kinds of exercise. There's yoga, there's strength training, there's aerobic exercise. They're all good. But when it comes to neurogenesis, increasing your rate of neurogenesis, the only kind that seems to be effective is aerobic exercise. So mm-hmm. running, walking quickly, biking, fast dancing, going up a mountain, anything that gets you breathing fast is aerobic exercise. And the brain just explodes with new brain cells when we do this. Mm-hmm. However, about half of those new brain cells die pretty quickly unless we do other things to keep up the survival of those new brain cells. So that's why a holistic approach is really important in this, to be stimulating the brain from all of these different angles to support optimal brain health. And it turns out, you know, we live in a very neurotoxic world. So there are lots and lots of things that just about everybody is doing that slows down our rate of neurogenesis and is neurotoxic, degrades the quality of our brain and therefore of our life.
So
now,
can you mention,
it used to be thought, sorry, go ahead.
Tell us what some of those are, some of the things that are neurotoxic.
Okay, so they're neurotoxic?
Yeah.
It's a twofold strategy. We need to stop doing things or reduce doing things that are neurotoxic, and then we need to do things that are neurogenic, that increase our rate of neurogenesis. So some things that are neurotoxic, for example, diet is a big part of all this. Diet is really quite a huge factor. So there's a lot of foods that just about everybody has as part of their diet that slow our rate of neurogenesis down. One of these are fried foods, oxidized fats. So if you want to build a good high-end house, you need good high-quality materials. You don't use rotting wood or decaying wood. You use high-quality materials. And it's the same with the brain. The brain is made up of about two-thirds fat. And so we need a lot of good, high-quality fats in our diet. And we don't need low-quality, unhealthy fats. And unhealthy fats are oxidized fats. Oxidized fats means that through heat or through oxygen, the fat molecule oxidizes, becomes rancid. And when we ingest it, and it goes into the bloodstream, that then oxidizes the fat in our bloodstream. It oxidizes the cholesterol in our bloodstream. That creates heart disease. That creates hardening of the arteries, atherosclerosis, and it creates inflammation. And inflammation slows neurogenesis to a crawl. Inflammation is one of the worst things for the brain. We want to eat an anti-inflammatory diet. And so one of the things we need to do is reduce as much as possible our consumption of oxidized fats. So that means things like cooking with vegetable oil. It's a terrible idea. We've all been told this is what you should cook in. It turns out the science behind that is now showing it's all wrong, that vegetable oil has a very low smoke point. It goes rancid at very low temperatures, all kinds of vegetable oils. So just about nobody should be cooking with vegetable oil. We should be cooking with coconut oil, or with butter, or with ghee, clarified butter, ghee, or even with tallow, or with lard. These things, saturated fats, have a much higher smoke point, much better to cook with. So, I mean, I hate to say this, because I used to love fish and chips, for example. I probably still do, but I don't let myself eat it anymore. But that kind of cooking at high temperatures, frying foods. They did this one experiment with people. They looked at people who ate fish 1 to 3 times a week, and they found out that they had 16% more gray matter, more neurons in the higher processing centers of the brain, unless they ate fried fish, in which case there was no difference. So Sorry, go ahead.
That's just a big revelation, you know, because people can eat fish and they say, well, I'm eating fish, but it's fried. Wow.
That's right. That's right, yes. So we need lots of good, healthy fats. So, as I mentioned, two-thirds of the brain is made up of fat. And of that, one-third of that fat is DHA. Now, DHA is one of the 3 omega-3 fatty acids, the kind we find in fish oil, in kinds of fish. We need lots of this. They did another experiment with monkeys where they raised some monkeys on a low omega-3 diet, and they raised another group of monkeys on a high omega-3 diet. And they looked at their brains later, and they found out that those monkeys on the low omega-3 diet had very simple, undifferentiated brains. But those monkeys on the high omega-3 diet had very complex, richly differentiated brains, almost like human beings. When it comes to the brain, complexity is good. We want to see complexity. And DHA is probably the single most important food for the brain that we can ingest, that we can take in. And so most people probably need to do this through fish oil capsules. And if you do a fish oil capsule, most people will do great with like 3, 4, 5 grams a day. But we want a fish oil capsule that is high in DHA. Some of them are not high in DHA. We want a high DHA capsule. And we also want the fish oil to be molecularly distilled. Otherwise, there's likely to be mercury in it. So mercury is one of the most potent neurotoxins that's known. and it concentrates in the food chain in fish. The bigger the fish, the higher the mercury content. So you want fish oil that's been molecularly distilled so it doesn't have any mercury and with a high DHA content to it. And this DHA increases the rate of neurogenesis hugely, and it's also anti-inflammatory.
Wow. I have another important question here about two other salt and sugar. I just ate out last night at a place where they put so much salt in the food, and, you know, I'm very tuned in, so I really felt it for hours afterwards. So what do you know about salt and sugar in the diet and how those affect the brain?
Yeah, good question. So salt is probably a little bit less of a problem than sugar. Sugar is a huge problem. I'll get to that in a second. But salt, we have so much added salt that our bodies weren't quite made for all this added salt. So it's clearly a risk factor in heart disease and high blood pressure, hypertension. So it's almost impossible to not get enough salt unless you're in the desert or something and sweating a lot. So added salt is problematic, but in terms of the brain, the bigger problem really is sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So getting a lot of high-quality fats is good and important for the brain. The other part is reducing sugar and getting very little sugar. It turns out that a high-sugar diet will cut your rate of neurogenesis in two. Now, that's astonishing. A high-sugar diet will cut your rate of neurogenesis by 50%. Now, when you think about the diet of the average American child who grows up eating, I don't know what, sugar frosted flakes for breakfast and orange juice, it's all sugar and bad fats. You can't make a good brain like that. Or if you're an adult, you're going to really diminish what's possible in terms of your brain. And it's not just sugar that's the culprit. It's really, particularly for us baby boomers, it's just about any kind of carbohydrate, because carbohydrates get turned into sugar sooner or later. Even if it's a complex carbohydrate, it eventually converts to sugar. And most of us over 40, have some degree of insulin resistance, right? Insulin allows sugar to be used by the body, by the cells. But when we have a high sugar diet or a high carbohydrate diet, which we've been told to eat for 30 or 40 years now by the government, it's only now that it's become clear that that was misguided. That most people have some degree of insulin resistance. It's estimated that 80% of the population has some degree of insulin resistance. That means that you've got extra insulin floating in your system, which is harmful to all different systems in your body. It means you have higher levels of blood sugar, of blood glucose, which causes glycation and is also responsible for early aging. And you can chart person's blood sugar levels and you can chart their rate of cognitive decline, and they match each other perfectly. Any baby boomer who's listening to this, one test that you should have when you go to have your yearly physical is called a hemoglobin A1C test. A hemoglobin A1C. And what the A1C test does is it measures your blood sugar levels for the past 3 months. It's like an average of the past 3 months. And if it's elevated, which just about everybody over 40 has it elevated, it would be wise to protect your brain to lower it. And that means reducing your carbohydrate intake and increasing good, healthy fats. You know, people have become completely paranoid about fats. If I eat fat, I'm going to get fat. And it turns out that's not the case. Eating fats, it doesn't make you fat. What makes people fat is excess carbohydrates and then this insulin resistance. And then we just don't process sugar very well or any kind of carbohydrate. You know, it's also related to Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is now being called by many people type 3 diabetes. that it's a problem with glucose metabolism as well. So
I never heard that. That's incredible.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, those of us, I imagine it's mostly fellow baby boomers here who are listening to this radio show. Right now, there is no hope, no cure, no prevention, nothing for Alzheimer's, according to conventional medical wisdom. It's a big problem. If you go on the Alzheimer's website, it says that 1 in 3 seniors now dies with either Alzheimer's or some other form of dementia. And that if present trend lines continue, in another few years, you will have, if you reach the age of 85, you'll have a 50% chance of developing Alzheimer's. Since most of us are expected to live to be 85, that gives us a 50-50 chance. And right now, also on the Alzheimer's Association website, it says it's the only major disease for which there is currently no treatment, no cure, no prevention. The pharmaceutical companies have spent billions of dollars and hundreds of clinical trials trying to come up with a drug that would help, and it has been a complete failure thus far.
But you're just saying there is a prevention.
Prevention
for it, but we have to do something. You can't just take a simple pill.
Exactly right. So it turns out that for the very first time, there has now been some research done from a holistic perspective. Now, most research is done by drug companies or mm-hmm. by academic researchers looking to discover the next new drug that they can make a fortune on. There's very little research done from a holistic perspective because everything is just about free or it doesn't cost very much. It can't be patented. But there's a few places that are. So here in California, there's something called the Buck Institute on Aging. And late last year, they came out with a study. This came out shortly before my book came out, so I included a few paragraphs about it. What they did was also a holistic approach. They did a kind of simplified version of what ended up in this book, a body, heart, mind, spirit approach. And they found that they could actually reverse the cognitive decline associated with Alzheimer's so that people who had to stop working because of cognitive decline and memory problems were able to regain their memory enough to go back to work for the 2 years that they followed them. Now, this is really exciting stuff. This is the first time there's been any hope for Alzheimer's. And then just a few months ago, there was another article in the British journal Lancet from a Finnish group, and it was the first randomized controlled study, 1,200 people, looking to see if you could delay or prevent cognitive decline in an at-risk group. And they also did a very super simplified version of what's in the book and found that they were able to prevent cognitive decline for the 2 years that they followed them in this study. So right now, it looks like the only hope for Alzheimer's is this kind of holistic approach, body, heart, mind, spirit. And diet is an important part of this, a very big part of this. But there's also emotional factors. There are mental cognitive factors. There are spiritual factors as well. So
and
it's a total approach.
That happens as people age. I've seen it with many of my relatives that, and friends, older parents of friends of mine, that as they age, their colleagues, their friends die or move away. They move away to be with their children, and it's very lonely. So just a person getting older and feeling all alone and not growing in any way, feeling depressed, all of that, that is something that we need to deal with.
That's hugely important. I'm glad you said that. That's a really important factor. It turns out people who are isolated and alone and lonely, first of all, they have a huge risk for heart disease. It's a bigger heart disease risk and high blood pressure risk than smoking is.
Wow.
And also, the rate of neurogenesis goes way down when a person is isolated. We are relational beings. We need to be in a relationship. And so you're right. That is one of the biggest problems in America with aging, that so many people age and over 50 who are isolated, who are not in a relationship. And this is very damaging for the brain. The rate of neurogenesis goes way down, as opposed to when we are in loving, supportive relationships, our rate of neurogenesis goes way up.
Right, and I've also seen where a parent is living with the children, you know, the daughter or the son and their spouse, but they're not being loved and nurtured. It's annoying to the family that
yes.
parent is, and, you know, they don't realize what that's doing to the parent's health.
That's right. That's exactly right. That kind of stressful relationship also is bad for the brain. It's also neurotoxic for the brain. If we're in stressful relationships, the brain actually shrinks in the hippocampus, which is the main area responsible for neurogenesis. The hippocampus actually shrinks with chronic stress and chronically stressful relationships. So you're right. It's not just any kind of relationship we need to be in. We need to be in loving, supportive relationships. And we need to be not in either no relationship or stressful relationships or chronically angry relationships, like bullying relationships are also very bad for the brain, neurotoxic for the brain.
And have you had any research done on maybe someone was in toxic relationships earlier on and then they got out of them? Have they done any research about improvement in the brain over time?
Yes. So there is both neurogenesis and neuroplasticity. And so the brain can generate new brain cells, and it can create new connections in those parts of the brain that don't make new brain cells. And so there can be a lot of healing. So it all depends on how great the stress was or the trauma was, how long it lasted, and at what time of life this occurred in. But even in our 50s, 60s, and 70s, the brain can be regenerated. The brain can, the rate of neurogenesis can increase at least five times up through our 60s. And in late life, it can increase by 3 to 5 times. So in our 70s and 80s and above, it can increase 3 to 5 times. And that was a few years ago before they discovered many of the things that increase our rate of neurogenesis. So it may be much more than that by now. Science hasn't caught up. The book goes into 30 or 40 different nutrients that increase our rate of neurogenesis. And there actually hasn't been a study done using all of those. Maybe it'll be much more than 5 times. We just don't know right now.
And there's another piece. And there's been a lot of research on touch. I trained in a lot of body therapies and combining it with emotional release and talking. And I know that touch can help to heal so much because it brings out what's in the subconscious and you can really heal. So I'm excited about your book, and I'd like to know more about how people can get in touch with you and find the book.
Okay. The book is called The Neurogenesis Diet and Lifestyle, and you can get it on Amazon or order it through any bookstore. You can also go to the book's website, which is neurogenesisdiet.com, or to my website, which is brantcortright.com. That's brantcortright.com. And you can get it through any of those.
It's been absolutely delightful speaking with you, and I just wonder if you could leave one final message for our listeners about what they can do right now to start improving their brain health.
Well, I would just follow up on what you said about touch, that loving touch increases our rate of neurogenesis, and we are a touch-starved society. So, again, it's not any kind of touch. It needs to be welcome, trusted touch. But if you reach out and touch somebody, your brain will thank you and their brain will thank you. Your rate of neurogenesis will increase.
That's beautiful. And also a smile, simple smile can help.
Absolutely. Love will increase our rate of neurogenesis. It increases oxytocin and other brain chemicals that accelerate our rate of neurogenesis.
Well, it was just delightful speaking with you. Thank you so much for sharing this. And I hope you will get your message out to a lot of people because we need help in this society.
Great. Thank you so much for letting me share all this.
So I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, healthybabyboomersnetwork.com, to get your free report, How to Live to 100 and Beyond, and be healthy. If you're ready for love, join the 30-Day Love Challenge. It will change your life, and Dr. Courtwright has reminded us it'll even improve your brain health. And I look forward to speaking to you again soon.